content of this podcast and any information, advice, opinions, or statements within it are not intended and are not to be used as a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. You should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice for any medical condition you may have, and you should seek the assistance of a healthcare professional for any such conditions. And always inform your doctor of any changes you make or are thinking about making to your lifestyle. My name is Lawrence Rosenberg, and this is the Alpha Human Podcast. Today's guest is Dr. Abulkalam Shamsuddin, a board-certified pathologist who holds a PhD from the University of Maryland, where he was a professor of pathology for 43 years, focused on research into the prevention and early detection of cancer. Dr. Shamsuddin was also a senior scientist at the Laboratories of Experimental Pathology and Human Carcinogenesis at the National Cancer Institute. Since then, he has gone on to invent a unique rapid cancer test to screen for a particularly interesting antigen that is typically hidden from the immune system, but unmasked in cancer cells and present in up to 90% of cancers and precancerous lesions. This technology is actually the core of cancer diagnostics company Oncoview's screening technology, where Dr. Shamsuddin is the co-founder and chief scientific officer. Additionally, Dr. Shamsuddin has authored well over 100 scientific papers on cancer prevention and detection, as well as groundbreaking studies on the benefits and efficacy of IP6, an anti-cancer agent whose development and commercialization he pioneered, and the subject of which we will be exploring in depth on today's episode. Dr. Shamsuddin, welcome to the show. It's an honor to have you here with us today.
Oh, thank you very much, Lawrence. It is my pleasure to be at your show and share my experience and what I have learned in terms of cancer prevention and cancer detection and IP6 and inositol with your audience. Pleasure is mine.
Wonderful. Very excited for this discussion, because just to set the table and give some context, 7 years and 8 months ago, I was diagnosed with kidney cancer. And they found a very large 14 centimeter tumor on my left kidney. They removed the tumor, they removed the left kidney. The cancer came back a year and a half ago in my liver. And so they took a chunk out of my liver as well. But that's okay. I'm stronger, more resilient, more educated, more enthusiastic than ever. But what also has happened more recently is I started having issues with my liver and my liver function. And what we noticed in running some tests is that my ferritin levels were extremely high. And after more tests, we found that I had an alteration of the HFE gene, which puts me at risk for hemochromatosis, which is, of course, highlighted or characterized by excessive iron storage. And so I started looking for some treatment or something that I could do besides, you know, what I was hearing from the doctors. I started investigating and researching, as I always do, as I've been doing for years, usually researching into cancer, so that I could be stronger and more resilient and more knowledgeable about how to keep myself healthy. But I started diving into the research on iron overload and what it can do to the body and to your cells, and how to get rid of iron, excess iron in the body. And lo and behold, I stumbled upon a compound called IP6, inositol hexaphosphate. And I read a number of studies on this. And then, ironically or not, it turns out that I started finding lots of information on IP6 and cancer and how it's effective in numerous studies with respect to certain cancers. And so as I looked further into this, I noticed that one name kept popping up when it came to the research and the studies on this compound and its effects on cancer and its effects on human health. And it was your name. So I started looking into your background. And I thought, I have to get you on the Alpha Human podcast so that we can discuss this. So I just wanted to kind of give you that context as to what it was that inspired me to reach out and what inspired my interest in this compound, this miracle compound, potentially, inositol hexaphosphate. So anyway, I hope that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely. Well, thank you for sharing that personal information with me. And I'm sorry about your kidney cancer and the metastasis. And the good thing is that allowed you to get into in-depth research and find out more about the various aspects, various fallacies and conundrum that's related to cancer treatment. And it's very complex. Some of it is pretty disappointing. Some of it is enlightening. There are rays of hope. So it's a good experience.
You know, weirdly enough, I like to say that it's actually been an incredible and rewarding experience for me. As weird as that sounds, you know, it has made me a better human, a better person in so many ways. But we'll put that to the side because this is about you and your insights. So my first question for you. So I've got a number of questions that I want to drill down into. But my first question is, on a previous episode of the Alpha Human podcast, where I was going into and getting into cancer and the origins of cancer and the different theories of cancer, I briefly explored this concept, this theory known as the tissue organization field theory, as an alternative to the somatic mutation theory of cancer, which posits that cancer is a genetic disease, and that is the prevailing view. However, the tissue organization field theory suggests that cancer originates from disturbances in tissue organization and cellular interactions within the microenvironment. And in your article that I read called A Simple Test for Cancer Screening, you delve into the field effect theory of carcinogenesis, which appears to me at least to resonate with the tissue organization field theory and its emphasis on tissue level processes actually being at the root of carcinogenesis and not necessarily genetics. Can you explain the field effect for our audience and how it played a role in your invention of a novel way to screen for cancer at the earliest stages of carcinogenesis?
Sure. First of all, I think when you talk about genetic changes, I think people have a very broad and maybe somewhat confusing idea about it. It's my understanding is that all cancers do start from, you have to have some genetic changes, some changes in the genome. And how does that affect the cells and tissues is where the field effect comes in. So if I may share the screen with you about the field effect, yes. I could explain it to you in a better manner.
Yes, that would be great. We'd appreciate that.
And okay.
For a quick comment, when I say that the field theory is an alternative potentially to the somatic theory, I'm more looking at alternatives to, because we know there's lots of cancers that show no driver mutation. And so for me, from all of my research, and certainly you're far more educated than I am on this, but it seems to me that where genetics, unless it is hereditary,
Correct.
where genetics do come into play is in the form of epigenetics, as opposed to all cancers having some manifestation prior to any, should I say, prior to the theory that all cancers come with a inherent genetic defect. I believe most of it is epigenetic, but I'll turn it over to you.
Most, I think when you talk about genetic cancers, there are very few. The percentage of cancers that happen from gene mutations, from inherited cancers, are very, very rare. And unfortunately, the misconception is such that people do think that that's what is very common. Again, there is a lot of politics there. If you look at the carcinogenesis process, most of the cancers are due to our environment, due to our lifestyle changes, due to the carcinogens you're exposed to. And cigarette smoke is a good example, whereby people smoke cigarette or other pollutants in our get into your lungs through the air that we breathe. Now, common sense would tell you that the carcinogens, whatever the toxin is in the air or in the cigarette smoke, is going to affect your entire tracheobronchial tree, not just one foci. So that's where the field effect phenomena comes in, that it says the carcinogen act throughout the entire field of the target tissue. And the target tissue could be the target tissue could be the entire large intestine, where the carcinogens are in the feces, or they travel through the blood into the large bowel. It could be the entire tracheobronchial tree, as I just mentioned, in terms of the carcinogen being in the air that we breathe. To the urinary bladder, when you have the carcinogen in the urine, and when it goes into the bladder, it exposes the entire bladder or a large part of it, or the entire mammary ductal tree. So that makes it possible, or it causes the changes that you see throughout the entire field, in kind of a not all of it, but in a sporadic manner in different areas. So this is a large bowel, for example, and this is the terminal portion of the ileum. And you have the right colon, the cecum, the right colon, the transverse colon, the left colon, the sigmoid colon, and the rectum. So to illustrate the point of the field effect, you may have a cancer somewhere, let's say here in the transverse colon, or a polyp here. But why is the cancer or the polyp there? That's because the entire large bowel has been exposed to the carcinogen that is in the feces or in the blood. Now, the carcinogen there, it's a carcinogenesis, it's a complex process. You have a DNA repair mechanism. Once the carcinogen acts with the DNA, it causes a carcinogen DNA interaction. And that's something that I had studied extensively when I was at the Laboratory of Experimental Pathology and Human Carcinogenesis at the NCI. I worked with the benchpyrene DNA adducts. I worked with the aflatoxin DNA adducts. And actually, we have found the adducts, the interaction in smokers and coke oven workers and so on and so forth. But that's another story. The point here is that carcinogen is going to make changes throughout the bowel or throughout the entire target organ. And some of these changes may or may not be visible depending on what test you do. If you use the proper technique, if you look at the proper marker, you may see the changes. For example, here I depict it in kind of a purple magenta color. So the marker that I used here, my stains or shows the cancer or the polyp as magenta, but there are foci throughout the entire field that also expresses the marker. Okay, now rectum being a convenient sampling site and accessible to the, let's say, the finger during routine digital examination when a patient goes to see the primary care physician, so he or she may take the rectal mucus and sample it. And as a result of the field effect phenomena, because of that, the cancer, no matter where the cancer is, would be detected in the rectal mucus. Well, is there any proof of that? Yes, there is. As a matter of fact, there was a study of, there's one study that was published, there are several studies, I'm taking one study, where 65 cancers and polyps from different parts of a large bowel are accurately detected from the rectal mucus sample, irrespective of the location. And this is the actual compilation of those tumors. So you have tumors in the large, in the right colon, in the transverse colon, in the sigmoid colon, and in the distal colon. So no matter where they were all detected because the entire field of the large bowel was affected. So that's the whole basis of field effect phenomena. Now we see the same thing in the lung. I mentioned to you there have been studies with this test, which is an OncoView test that looks for the marker. And the test there have been three studies, two in Canada, one in China, that have detected fairly accurately, as you mentioned, approximately 90% accuracy, cancers of the lung from the coughed up sputum. There's been studies, a couple of pilot studies done at MD Anderson and University of Missouri on breast cancer, again, showing the expression of the marker in the nipple fluid in patients who had the cancer. So it is the whole field of breast, for example, that is affected, and the nipple aspirate, the fluid sample taken from nipple aspirate would express the marker. Okay.
That's incredible. And, given the way testing is currently done, and, we could talk about testing, could probably do a whole episode on this, on your research into testing and your invention and how it actually detects the cancer, whether it's in the mucus or the sputum from the when you cough up with, if it were lung cancer, or in the intestinal mucus if you were to test from the rectum for colon cancer due to the field effect. What's amazing is how easy it would be to find out if you had cancer should you take this test. Before I move on, is your test at OncoView, is it available to, for anybody to take, or is it, how does that work?
We are getting a kit. This is a point of care test. So you could, it takes only about 15 to 20 minutes from the time you collect the sample to the time you get the test results. So we are hoping that when the patient or individual or healthy individual goes to the doctor's office, gives a sample, by the time they're ready to be checked in, by the time they're ready to be seen by the physician, the results will be there. It's a binary test. A magenta color is positive. No color is negative. And so it's a screening test. It's not a diagnostic test. It'll tell you whether somebody has a cancer or a precancerous change. And then you do the subsequent diagnostic test to confirm it. We are in the process. We established a company recently. We have got a test kit. Now we have to go through the phase 1, phase 2 clinical trials to satisfy the FDA. We're hoping that in 2024, it will be available. Yes.
Okay, so it'll be available through doctor. It's not direct to consumer.
I'm sorry?
We're not
at the doctor's office, yes.
Doctor's office. Okay, gotcha. Understood. Obviously the best way to deal with cancer is to find it early. And if it's a test that can be done at any time by anyone inexpensively, without having to go through scans and biopsies to find things out, if you can get that detection early on, and so, you know, in a way that is not invasive, in a way that tells you within 15 or 20, I mean, that's, you know, that is powerful. So looking forward to learning more about that. I also have done some research. I know the marker that you're looking for. I actually did a podcast based on that marker, because that marker is also, there's some interesting things about that marker, the T antigen. But we could save that for another podcast, because what I want to get into is once someone uses your, you know, someone goes to the doctor, they're given the test kit from OncoView, and it turns out, whoa, they find out some unexpected news that they have cancer, or that they're showing markers for cancer. You know, what do you do then? Right. So I'm very interested in the different strategies one can employ to deal with, to manage, or to overcome cancer. And I'm very interested in how natural compounds can not only prevent cancer, because that's the optimal. You want to prevent it. You don't ever want to get to the stage where you're dealing with it. But I'm very interested in how natural compounds not only prevent cancer, but deal with it at the precancerous stage, or once cancer develops. And you are renowned for being a pioneer in the investigation of that compound that I mentioned in the introduction, which is IP6, which has shown remarkable results as an anti-cancer nutrient. So this is now where I want to dive deep into inositol hexaphosphate. Firstly, what is inositol and what is IP6?
Well, thank you. That's a very good introduction to the topic. As you said, then once the test is positive, either there is cancer or there is very high risk of cancer, there are precancerous changes. If the cancer is detected, then you take the treatment procedure. But if there is no cancer, it is very likely that the person is at a very high risk of getting a cancer. And if you get the cancer, it's kind of too late. It's a catching up game. The idea is to prevent it so that you don't go that far. Mm. And as you mentioned, there are different ways to prevent it. There are lifestyle changes, dietary supplements, and what we're going to talk about today is IP6, inositol, and inositol hexaphosphate. So if I may share the screen with you and the audience, let me illustrate to you what IP6 is. So IP6 is inositol hexaphosphate, which is used to be called phytic acid. That's a misnomer. The chemical name is myo-inositol hexakisphosphate. So therefore, I basically Christian the name IP6 to make it simple. And what's in the name? You know, if you hear the word phytic acid, oh, okay, phytic acid, nitric acid, it has a very bad connotation. You know, is it dangerous? It is hydrochloric acid. No. In the two different forms of it, in the pure chemical form, it is indeed inositol hexakis phosphoric acid. But naturally, it is attached with calcium, magnesium, ions. So it becomes a phosphate, is a salt of it. And this is the molecule, it's hexacarbon with 6-phosphate attached to it. It's the basic molecule is myo-inositol, which is very similar to glucose. The structure is very similar with one minor difference here and here. And IP6 is the same molecule with 6-phosphate attached to it. And as I mentioned, the phosphate groups are charged groups, are negatively charged. So they are naturally, when you find them in the cereal grain or in the soil or wherever, or in the body, they cannot exist as salt, as an acid. They are in the form of a salt. They already have calcium, magnesium, diver and cations in there. And that is IP6. Now, what's the relationship between inositol and IP6? Well, it's like the chicken and the egg. One comes from the other. And the, you know, you can say which comes from the, which one, I don't know, but that's what it is. There are biochemists who have been studying this phenomena over the last 50, 60 years, and they have different theories, but very simplistically speaking, one, you know, that we have enzymes in the body that adds a phosphate on or removes a phosphate on and, you know, off. And so there are no reason why one does not go from the other. That's the way it is. You had a question for me that what is the relationship between inositol and IP6? And do you want to go into that or you want me to go to this?
I'm interested in, does it need to, so inositol and IP6, could you share with us, here's what I'd like to get into actually. Could you share with us how you first encountered IP6?
It's a very fascinating story. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, how did this even, because you've been looking into this for decades, but like what sparked your interest in it and its potential as an anti-cancer agent?
Okay, that's a good question, actually. It's interesting, we read a lot of literature. People nowadays, thanks to Google and other resources, people just look up and read the paper and they say, oh, wow, you know, this does that. In my humble opinion, little learning is dangerous. We had the concept, and I did a PhD, you mentioned, and my PhD basis was an experimental carcinogenesis using colon as a model. So in my studies, I was reading everything as much as I could in terms of why colon cancer forms, what is the risk of colon cancer. And everybody knows that high fiber diet prevents us from having colon cancer. High fiber diet is good. Well, as I read most of the studies, and I emphasize, most of the papers say that yes, high fiber diet is preventive of colon cancer. But then I look at some epidemiological studies, some of them do not find any correlation, and some of them actually found a negative correlation. Experimentally, again, the same thing, most of the experimental studies show that yes, you give rats or mice high fiber diet, they prevent the cancer. But there was one paper that I read from Lucian Jacobs out of University of California, San Francisco. And I knew Lucian very well personally, and I had very high regards for him. And his paper showed that no, in his study, the mice that were given high fiber diet actually had an increase in the incidence of colon cancer. It didn't make sense to me. I said, you know, on one hand, all these hundreds of thousands of people are telling me that high fiber diet prevents it. And here Lucian says, no, it doesn't. It actually increases. So I started reading more and more about it. Then the study came out of a study from Finland and Denmark that were comparing the incidence of colon cancer and breast cancer in those two populations. Finns eat less fiber than the Danes do. And the Danes actually eat double the amount of fibers than the Finns do. Unfortunately, the incidence of colon and breast cancer is just about double that in Finland. So one could ask the question, oh, so is fiber causing cancer? Alternatively, what I asked is that what is it that the fins eat that prevents them from colon cancer and breast cancer. Well, then comes enter Ernst Graf, a serial chemist in, I believe he was in Pillsbury Corporation in Minnesota, and he published a hypothesis paper, which I don't see how could that paper ever been published, but I'm glad it got published. Thankful to him for publishing the paper and to the journal for publishing the paper. He simply said that the reason the Finns have a lower incidence of cancer is because they eat a lot of porridge, and the porridge has a lot of phytic acid, which is IP6. But he said that, well, and that comes to your story of the high iron, and the phytic acid or IP6 is a strong antioxidant. And if you remove the iron has an ability to cause oxidative damage. In the Fenton reaction, you have to have iron to produce the superoxide, the free radicals. If you remove the iron, then you don't produce the free radicals. And it was his hypothesis that that's why they have low incidence of colon cancer. Okay, but here's the story. But that's fine for colon cancer. Why the Finns also have a low incidence of breast cancer? At that time, this is back in the 80s, people didn't think that phytic acid or IP6 gets into your blood. So why would reducing, okay, if you reduce the iron from your, you know, from your cells in the colon, you are preventing the colon from having the cancer. But that doesn't answer why the breast cancer would be less. So again, here comes around the same time, very interestingly, IP3 came into existence. People, scientists started to find IP3, inositol triphosphate, as a molecule for cellular signal transduction. Should the cell divide from 1 to 2, 2 to 4, 4 to 8, as it happens in cancer? Or shouldn't the cell divide? And that signal is mediated by IP3, inositol triphosphate. And that was actually identified in the slime mold. Nobody, at that time, it was not discovered in mammalian cells. It was only in the slime mold. And then I said, well, we, as I said at the beginning of the conversation, that there are enzymes in the body that can add a phosphate on. We know that. There are phosphatases and kinases. Either they add a phosphate or remove a phosphate. It happens all the time, ATP to ADP and AMPs. You know, adenosine monophosphate, diphosphate, it happens all the time. So why isn't it possible? And we know that there is inositol in our body. So why isn't it possible that the IP6 actually goes into our body and then it does the same thing in different other organs? Now, this is a crazy idea, and I have a tendency not to make a fool of myself in the early days as a child. When I did, I was snubbed and told, you're not only stupid, you're crazy. So I didn't want to hear that again. So I didn't really pass it on, you know, discuss it with any of my colleagues. And and I actually work pretty much on independently. So instead of talking to people and being told stupid and crazy, I just decided to do some experiments. So fortunately, I had some grant money, and next day I formulated some theories. I started working on inositol. I said, well, if I add inositol to IP6, and if IP3 is the molecule, then you could get double the number of IP3 from there, and you could probably see the effects, better effects. So I just did a whole set of experiments, and fortunately, all of them worked. I had to repeat the experiment because it was almost like too good to be true. I had a theory, I had a hypothesis, it works. And people, even now, till now, there are a lot of people who think that IP6 does not go into the cells, which is not true. And I had to go through the process of proving again and publishing the papers showing that, yes, IP3 does go into the cell, does go into the body. It does get dephosphorylated from IP6 to IP5, 4, 3, 2, 1 inositol. And then in the urine, it gets excreted. There have been numerous studies. We've done that. And this IP6 actually goes inside the cancer cells as well. We published paper on that. Yes, we did all of those experiments. So that's the long and short of your question of how I came into IP6.
It's a fascinating story. And given that IP6 actually does get into the cell, how is it, so what's the mechanism, how is it actually preventing cancer in the cell?
That's a $10 billion question. Unfortunately, this area has not been very attractive to a lot of scientists and has not, as you know, in order to do research, you have to get grants, and it has not been very popular with the funding agencies or with the researchers. So not much work has been done on it, but the limited number of work that has done shows that it does affect the DNA repair mechanism, number one. It does affect the cell proliferation, cell cycle kinetics. It does induce differentiation of the cells. So as you know, in cancer, and there are two fundamental things, is uncontrolled cell division. Normally the cells divide, for example, in your skin, in your gut, in the rest of the body, cells continue to divide at different rates. Some keep on dividing all through life, and brain cells don't divide all through life, although there are some studies that show that that's also not true. There may be degeneration there. But in cancer, cells keep on dividing and dividing and dividing, and that's a problem. Also, they do de-differentiate. The normal cells have a normal behavior. In cancer, the cells don't behave properly. It's almost like the children or the people in our society that go astray, that they become criminals or they become gang members. And you can actually, they don't do the normal work that the normal people do, along with their change in malignant behavior, like the cancer cell. You can tell them by the way they dress, by the way they walk, by the way they talk, and so on and so forth. So that's what cancer cells do. And IP6 seems to, the studies that I focused on are not so much of exact biochemical pathways, because I'm not a biochemist, I'm more of a pathologist and cell biologist. So my research has been focused more on the cellular level rather than on the biochemical or genetic level. And what I found, and also I looked at the immunity, the natural killer cells are some of the cells that provide a natural protection against foreign bodies, as well as cancer. When cancer is established, the cancer cell starts to establish in the body, the natural killer cells do come and start eating them up, destroying them. So I started working on natural killer cell. One of my postdocs, Dr. Abdul Baten, he was interested in natural killer cell, and thanks to him, we embarked on that study, which was later carried on with Dr. Ivana Vucenic, my associate, and we have shown that IP6 does actually boost the natural killer cell activity, and inositol plus IP6 does it even more. So there are various things. I looked at the mechanisms from cellular ways and differentiation pathways. My colleague Ivana Vucenic has done the studies on looking at the various genetic markers, but I have not gone into that. There are other folks, scientists in, for example, in Poland. There's some work going on in there, and also in Qingdao in China. They are looking at the various molecular pathways to dissect it. In general, it does. It upregulates the P53 tumor suppressor gene. We can go into that. I've written a book on, I've written a couple of books actually on IPv6, and if somebody wants to read more about it, I can give the references to the book, to those papers in there.
I'll ensure we have the links in the show notes so that people can access it. I've read one of your books, so you know I kind of already have a sense of why I you know how IP6 works, why it works. It just appears that there's a number of mechanisms at play.
Absolutely.
Right. It's not necessarily just
different, very different, a lot of different mechanisms. Yes.
Very powerful. So I guess another question would be, given this is a natural compound, found in these fibrous foods, why is IP6 more effective in supplement form compared to getting it from dietary sources?
Okay. One of the foods, common thing in the diet is corn. Corn is pretty high in IP6, about 6% weight by weight. Sesame is about 8%. Black seed also have a very high amount of IP6. Now, the South African Bantus eat about half a kilo of maize diet every day. And they don't have the cancer, they don't have diabetes, they don't have heart disease.
Wait a second. So say that again. In South Africa, say again, what group is eating? Say it again.
The Bantus eat about half a kilo of maize every day, in their diet.
And there's no sign of cancer in.
They don't get cancer. The incidence of cancer is extremely low. Diabetes is non-existent, virtually. Heart disease is virtually non-existent. But when they move to Johannesburg, mm-hmm. and live there for a few decades, and their children, they start getting all the diseases of the Western world, of the disease of affluence. So now you have to eat to protect yourself, as I said, from the example of the Bantus, you have to eat that much of diet. Now, if you have 6% in corn, not all of it gets absorbed because you have to get it released from the food, and by the time you release it, there are enzymes that are ready to chew it. The phosphatases and are there in the gut. So it's not the most effective way to do it. That's number one. And number two, 50 years or 100 years ago, our dietary habit or the pollution in the environment, they're all much less. Over the years, because of the industrialization and progress in development in the society throughout the world, there's more pollution, there's more carcinogen, there are more carcinogens in the diet, more carcinogens in the environment. And so the insult is higher, so you need more of protection. I mean, a natural diet is not enough. So either you have the option of eating a large amount of diet, or you take the supplement. Instead of 500 gram, you take 500 milligram, something like that, a thousandfold less.
Fantastic. I mean, that's incredible that they're eating what's essentially slightly over a pound of maize a day, and very low incidence, if not cancer, being essentially non-existent. Fascinating. So beyond preventing cancer, which is the ideal, Let's look at IP6 as a weapon for managing or mitigating cancer. So I understand you demonstrated that not only is supplemental IP6 quickly absorbed in the gastrointestinal tract, but that it also rapidly that it's also rapidly taken up by cancerous cells, and that orally administered IP6 can reach target tumor tissues distant from the gastrointestinal tract. Is that the case?
Yes, we believe so.
So we understand how it prevents cancer, but now if you've got cancer and okay, the IP6 is being taken up by the cancer cell, you know, all those mechanisms you mentioned earlier, you know, maybe they don't come, maybe that's not an advantage now because the cell has turned cancerous. So once the cell has turned cancerous, yes, it's taking up the IP6, but how is the IP6 mitigating that cancer?
Well, again, it does go inside the cell, and I believe it goes inside the nucleus. Lucian Cocco and University of Bologna had shown that IP6 and other inositol phosphates are actually shuttled back and forth from the cellular cytoplasm into the nucleus. So it does affect there. And there have been a lot of very elegant studies showing that IP6 actually can affect the DNA repair mechanism. When you have a carcinogen DNA interaction, you have mutation within the DNA. So when a carcinogen acts with the DNA, there is a carcinogen DNA interaction. You have to excise it, you chop it off. There are enzymes within the cell, within the nucleus, that removes the damaged DNA. And IP6 actually does stimulate the DNA repair mechanism. There's an enzyme called Ku that it does stimulate to chop off the enzyme and repair the DNA. So that's one mechanism. The other mechanisms that I mentioned, that it affects the cellular proliferation, cell division, it affects how the cell should divide, it affects, it regulates those enzymes, those pathways, and stops the cell from dividing, and in an uncontrolled manner, and again causes the cells to differentiate.
So I understand differentiation. So are we saying that, you know, because I could understand where a cell that is undergoing stress or damage becomes a candidate for turning into a cancerous cell, and why IP6 can keep that from happening. But we're also saying that, if I've got this right, once it is cancerous, once the cell has turned and is showing the hallmarks of cancer, it's switched from, let's say, oxidative phosphorylation for the production of ATP. Now it's relying on glycolysis, and it's showing those hallmarks. Where are you saying that as the cell starts to invade, you know, starts to divide uncontrollably, are we saying that it causes the cell to act, the cancerous cell to actually act normally? Forget the DNA repair mechanism for a moment. When we talk about differentiation, you're talking about how a heart cell, for instance, when it divides, that new cell is going to become a heart cell. It's going to differentiate as a heart cell, right? As a heart cell. But not a cell that doesn't differentiate will not become a heart cell. It'll just become this you know, this cell that does nothing other than grow, 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 and become a burden on the organ. But you're saying that IP6 will cause the cancer cell to differentiate and act like a normal cell.
Correct. Correct. And I can, if I may, show some slides. Share
yeah,
the screen
please.
With you and choose.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me go on. Let's skip that slide. Okay. So this is a this is a schematic diagram of some cancer cells. The cells are nucleus are very large. The cytoplasm is less, and it's kind of a bluish. What IP6 does, it makes the cell change into normal looking cell. Okay, that's on a schematic diagram. I'm going to show you an example of breast cancer cells. So on your at the bottom panel is a control MCF7 human breast cancer cells.
Okay,
you can see the cells are large. And there are quite a few of them in this picture. These pictures were taken in the same magnification. The whole field is crowded with cancer cells.
Yes.
This is control. You give them IP6, okay, and you see that there are fewer cells.
Wow.
Much fewer cells. But one of the things that happens you find in breast is milk. And lactalbumin is a product, is a protein that's found in the milk, in the breast milk. So if you look for lactalbumin in the breast, you see that, and they're both stained, they're both being tested for lactalbumin expression. The control cells, as you mentioned, don't behave normally. So therefore, they're not producing the lactalbumin, okay? You give them IP6, there are fewer cells, and the brown color is an indication of their expression of lactalbumin. Now these cells are behaving normally to produce lactalbumin. They're actually even smaller, and they're in different sizes and shapes, okay?
Unbelievable.
Okay, and one of the functions, fundamental things in biological science and any science is actually dose response relationship. The effect that you see, is it related to the dose? If you increase the dose, do you see an increased effect? And lo and behold, we do. You give, and this is a bar graph showing the control cells, cancer cells, not producing lactalbumin. If you give 1 millimolar IP6, it produces some. If you give 5 millimolar IP6, it produces even more. So the IP6 actually increases the expression of lactalbumin in MCF7 in a dose-dependent manner. That's an example of that. And you can see, I mentioned about the growth, cell growth. We can go into that unless you want me to go into the cell growth.
Yes, yes, please go into how IP6 and
okay.
cancer cell growth.
So yes. Here's a mention that this number of cells grow. The cells keep on growing, but if you give IP6, the growth slows down. And these are two different breast cancer cell lines. MCF7 is a hormone-dependent, estrogen-dependent human breast cancer cell. MDMB231 is a independent, is not dependent on hormonal growth. You
okay.
Give them IP6 again, and these are colonies. So you put them in petri dishes, and the cells, like the humans, we go settle in a different place. We form colonies, you know, form villages here and there. So these cells, cancer cells, form colonies, like the bacterial colonies, the human colonies. And you give them IP6, the number of colonies goes down with increasing dosage. And these blue dots are individual colonies. Now, and that's irrespective. So that's the beauty, is that it bypasses the hormonal status of the cancer cells.
That's
now,
incredible.
Interestingly, I'm sorry, you wanted to ask something?
No, I was just saying that's incredible.
The interestingly, the National Cancer Institute, as a result of my activism and basically bugging my senator, Senator Paul Sarbanes, and Representative Dan Burton from Indiana, they did a study on IPv6. And National Cancer Institute has something called a 60-cell assay, where they take 60 different cancer cell types and does a very rapid testing of those cells. I wanted to see if their idea is, can the substance, can the drug kill the cancer cells? Well, IPv6 doesn't really kill the cancer cell. As they say, it causes the cells to behave normally and the cells die normally. But at a very high dose, it can cause apoptosis, but not to the extent the chemotherapy does. That's the beauty of it. Okay. Interestingly, every single of those 60 cell, as the doses, so on the lower portion at the left side of this graph is the lowest dose, which is in a millionfold less than what we had used. There's a log scale. And towards the end, almost all of them showed a reduction in the growth. Here's an example of the breast cancer cell line that they did a study on 8 different breast cancer cell lines. And every single of those more or less showed a difference. The interesting thing is that they tested it at millionfold less than what we had tested. And their idea is, well, it doesn't work at this dosage, so this is no good. So this is no good at all. But as the count towards the doses that we had done and others have done at millimolar range, the previous slide that I had shown you, go back here, this is in millimolar range, 1 millimolar.
Right.
Okay. Or 2 millimolar, you see the effect. So when they go into the millimolar range, you start seeing actually 50% growth inhibition within 24, 48 hours. But that's not good enough for the NCI. And they had actually sent me letters saying that, no, our idea is to kill the cancer cells at a very low dosage. So this is no good. We are not going to be testing it.
But hold on a second. Hold on. So when we talk about such a low dosage, meaning a millionfold less than you were testing at, can, just to put it in context for our listeners, if they used the dose that you were testing at, what would that translate to in a, you know, if a human were to take the equivalent dose of IP6?
Based on the on the rat experiments that we have done extensive rat experiments in the rats and mice.
Mm-hmm.
We look at it at about maximum of 8 to 10 gram a day of IP6.
Okay, so 8 to 10 grams a day of IP6. And
for the treatment.
Yeah.
For treatment, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So
for prevention instead of less.
Yeah, yeah. So but let's just say between 8 and 12, just call it 10, right? 10 grams. You know, that's 20 capsules of IP6, you know, as it's sold today commercially. And in that instance, at that dosage, you're showing that those cancer cells stop growing.
Correct. And there are patient
who cares?
Data as well.
Who cares? So, or they start behaving normally. Who cares if you don't kill the cells? You're not.
No, then NCI cares because their idea is to kill the cancer cells. I have written letters from the NCI director. Ed Saucerville had letters of those that at a different time. I'd be happy to share with you those letters. That'd be too much for this session today.
Right.
But yeah, very clearly saying that the NCI's goal is to kill the cancer cell. And IP6 doesn't kill the cancer cells, and you know, that's not their goal. Yeah.
Gotcha.
And that's okay. The reason they said, okay, we can, it's no good.
Okay, all right. Well, sounds good to me. So here's another question for you. I want to go back a bit to, you know, you talked about IP, we talk about IP6 being a phytate. And there's a common caution by a growing number of health influencers against consuming nuts and seeds and grains due to their phytate content. Because phytates are often labeled as what's called, and I know you know this, but phytates are known as anti-nutrients because they block absorption of essential minerals. They block calcium, they block zinc absorption, they block magnesium. Intriguingly, IP6 is the predominant form of phytate found in those types of foods, in nuts and grains, etc. In your book, the title of your book is IP6 and Inositol, Nature's Medicine for the Millennium. You address this issue regarding phytates being so-called anti-nutrients as being a misconception. Particularly with respect to IP6. Can you please speak to this? Why is this a misconception? Why is IP6 and phytate not an anti-nutrient?
Well, first of all, this has actually came out of a rumor. It's almost like the rumor that we have used to justify invading Iraq for the weapon of mass destruction. It was weapon of mass deception. And I'd like to submit that this is exactly what that is, a mass deception. The original study, how it started is back in the 50s, there was one pretty shoddy report that came out from study in Egypt and in Iran, and telling us that people who eat unleavened bread have a deficiency of minerals, of zinc and magnesium and so on. And they said that, well, the unleavened bread has a lot of phytate. The phytate is actually inositol hexaphosphate. It's calcium, magnesium, inositol hexaphosphate is the phytate. So based on that, that's the source of the rumor. And everybody basically jumped on it and saying, okay, phytate is bad, phytate is bad, phytate is bad. Nobody has done, not obviously nobody, very few people, nobody has done the study taking, okay, take some IP6, feed it to the rats, feed it to the mice, or take it yourself. And do you get a deficiency of calcium, magnesium, and zinc, and so on and so forth? And the answer is no. And when the few people who have done it, Professor Felix Grasses in Mallorca in Spain has done some studies using this, and he has shown absolutely no evidence of difference in deficiency in humans. And I have done studies in my lab. As a matter of fact, before I gave IP6 to my rats, I took it myself to make sure that I don't get it.
Okay.
That I don't die. I'm not dying because I'm taking IP6. Okay. So, and then the experiment that we have done in our rats, we did a lifetime study of and looked at the blood, looked at the iron level, looked at the copper, calcium and magnesium and zinc level, and there is absolutely no difference in by giving IP6 when the animals were taking IP6 in their drinking water. Then the reviewers, some people say, well, the blood is not a good thing. You have to look at the bone level, because in the long term, you have to see what the level of these minerals in the bone. Well, we did that too. There's absolutely no indication, there's no evidence that in these animals, there was any deficiency of the minerals. And I have been taking IB6 very religiously for the last 25 years, actually 25 years, from 1998, about 2 grams a day. And trust me, I have no deficiencies of any of the minerals. And actually, there are published reports as well. I'll share with the data with you later on.
Okay, so clearly you believe in your product, that's for sure. Taking it for 25 years, I certainly wish I learned about it 25 years ago. But another fact, so, okay, fine. It's not blocking magnesium, it's not blocking calcium, it's not causing this, but on the other hand, its ability to maybe block or chelate, a certain mineral could be a good thing, right? So another fascinating thing I learned from your book is that IP6 chelates iron, but it does, and the term chelate means, it pulls it out of the body. But IP6 does chelate iron only when there's an excess accumulation of iron and not under normal conditions. Yeah. Is that the case? Can you explain that?
Yeah, it's actually a very fascinating thing. First of all, IP6 is, it could be inositol hexaphosphoric acid and inositol hexaphosphate. Now, in the natural form that we have, either as a supplement or in the diet that we have, it is already bound to calcium and magnesium. So all the hands are tied. There is calcium and magnesium already in there. So there's no reason to believe that is going to cause chelation of anything.
Okay.
Now, in the test tube in the lab, you do get inositol hexaphosphoric acid. Of course, their hands are free. They got 16 binding sites. They're going to be binding to not 16, 12 binding sites. So they're going to be binding to 12 monovalent cations, such as 12 sodium molecules, or 12 potassium, or 6 calcium, or calcium and magnesium, and so on and so forth. Now, this is a conundrum. I don't know why, and one has to become somewhat philosophical about it. There are things that IP6 does that are actually conflicting. For example, in terms of the neutrophils, in order for the polymorphonuclear cells, the neutrophils, to kill a bacteria, you have to produce free radicals, superoxide formation, okay? Because the actual killing of bacteria is done by superoxide.
Right.
And when you give IP6 to the neutrophils, you grow some, you put some neutrophils in a petri dish, and you give some, sprinkle some IP6, the neutrophils kill the bacteria in a much more efficient way. Yet, IP6 is a very strong antioxidant.
Yeah, that's a conundrum.
Yeah, it's a conundrum. Same thing with the phytate. Why I have several reports of patients who reported to me and sent them their reports, and I actually posted it in the Facebook pages of their charts showing that how their iron level has dramatically gone down by taking IP6 hemochromatosis patients. And I have at least two people from UK who had high copper level, the Wilson's disease, and they had taken IP6, and they had reported that they're much, much improved.
Well, I can so, tell you. Oh, go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, so here's a conundrum. I think it's something that does, when things are abnormal, it brings it down. If things are abnormally high, it brings it down to a normal level. When things are abnormally low, it brings it up. And the example, another example I'll give you, is the autoimmune diseases. And IP6 boosts the immunity. It boosts the natural killer cell activity tremendously. So one would think that, okay, this will be dangerous in autoimmune condition where the immunity is already high.
Yeah.
No. It actually soothes the autoimmune diseases. I had people who had systemic lupus erythematosus and other autoimmune diseases. They take an IG6, and some of them are just perfectly healthy.
Wow.
The eczema. I one of my best friend's mother. Unfortunately, she passed away last year. She lives in France, and she lived up to 97, and she had eczema all her life. But every time Gerard would go to France to visit his mother, she would say, "Bring me some IP6 because her eczema has been gone ever since she met me."
Wow.
Which is like 20 years ago.
So it seems, and by the way, I've read this in studies before about other compounds, and it sounds like the same thing is occurring with IB6 in that the effects are selective.
Yes.
It selectively has these effects on the afflicted or damaged cells, or the adjuvant, or whatever is inflaming or triggering these cells. It seems to have a selective effect on those cells versus on the healthy cell.
Well, the healthy cells, it does nothing. We grow the healthy cells in culture. It does absolutely nothing to them.
Yeah. So
we have tested that. So again, you know, when something is wrong, it fixes that. That's all it is.
Yeah.
And I think nature has a design, because otherwise it would not be in every single major food chain in this planet. You look at everybody in this planet, no matter what the culture is, we all eat some sort of cereal grain in our diet. And IP6 is in all the cereal grains. This is in all the cells in our body. So there has to be a reason why nature has provided us with that. And it's a matter of moderation. Either you reduce the amount of cereal grain by moving from moving into Joburg and not getting a supply of IP6 or whatever, but there has to be some kind of an interesting design by nature.
So when everything's fine, it doesn't mess around, and when things go wrong, it selectively heals and fixes. It's just amazing what we find here with IP6, and that it does it in so many different instances, so many different conditions. You know, where I've read about selective mechanisms, being beneficial. You know, you'll find it with a natural compound, because you'll find these dichotomies elsewhere in other studies with other compounds, but typically you'll see where a compound just does has a selective mechanism for one, and it solves one issue. IP6 seems to be doing this in, just whether, like you said, whether it's the immune function and, not over triggering the autoimmune response versus actually triggering the immune response when it's needed, right? Or not messing, actually keeping a healthy cell healthy while taking action on a cancerous cell and allowing it to differentiate. So just fascinating stuff. Given this ability to selectively chelate iron and how that, can be a boon for hemochromatosis, for instance. And again, I can attest as well, because my ferritin levels are through the roof and I've been taking IP6, and already in my blood work, I'm seeing it come down dramatically. So I can attest to the fact that it's working for me. But what I'm curious about is, increased iron accumulation, and reduced iron export out of the cell is also known as one of the hallmarks of cancer. In fact, iron overload is associated with malignant transformation, with cancer progression, and metastasis. And I think you mentioned it earlier in a study with a scientist that you know. They were talking about why cancer could be forming in the colon, even though, you know, they're eating the fiber. What's happening? It could have to do with the Fenton reaction. And so, you know, clearly iron toxicity is implicated in causing cancer. So what I'm curious about is one of the reasons IP6 potentially so effective against cancer, is it because of its ability to remove iron overload from these tissues?
Yes, that is one function. Yes, it's one of the mechanisms. Yes. Yes. It's quite possible. As you mentioned early on, that there are numerous different pathways by which it works. And being an antioxidant, being removing the iron, is just one of the multiple ways that IP6 really works.
So what's amazing that, you know, now I, you know, one of your colleague Vucinic, Professor Vucinic, who I think worked underneath you when you were at the University of Maryland, she wrote a book.
She worked with me.
She worked with you, right? She wrote a book called Too Good to Be True.
Yes.
It's about you and about IP6. But I think that's an appropriate title because it, you know, it just seems like it, but like you said, Mother Nature and, you know, there's a reason God created this, this thing, and it's in all the, you know, the food chain. It's there for a reason. Maybe this is it. So many of the studies on IP6 have shown great effectiveness in the lab, in vitro, with mice, and of course, anecdotally as well, you know, my own story included. Has there been any studies on the effectiveness of IP6 when it comes to treating cancer in humans?
Yeah, there has been, unfortunately, again, the numbers, published reports are very few. That's because, you know, the clinical trials with drugs take millions of dollars, and yeah. Pharmaceutical industry does have deep pockets, so they sponsor those clinical trials. This is a diet supplement, and here the diet supplement companies are basically very small mom-and-pop shops, and they're basically also, you know, dog-eat-dog kind of a thing. They're making good money, and so they don't really care about it. But in spite of that, there have been a few studies. It's hard to get regular MDs or physicians to be convinced of using this. A lot of them hear the report from their patients, and they say, okay, that's a good thing. Keep doing whatever you're doing, but don't tell us what you're doing. You know, as long as it works for you, it's fine.
Okay.
But there are some studies. Yeah, I'll tell you that. But before I go into that, I'd like to share the screen with you about some of those reports. And but I want to go into the anti-nutritional thing again. As a result of this rumor and this prevailing dogma that IP6 is under-nutritional, there are scientists working feverishly to prove that it is anti-nutrient, and they're trying to eliminate IP6 from our diet by genetically modifying the food grade. Now, you can imagine, they're trying to prepare LPA, low phytic acid genes, to introduce into the rice and produce rice with low IP6 so that this is not an anti-nutrient. Now, 20, 30 years ago, I had written a letter to the editor when that paper first came out. I said, don't take IP6 out of my cereals yet. But unfortunately, the lobbying effect, and you can imagine who does the lobbying, because who is to be gained by the GMOs and all that? They have tried. There's a world government, world body called IFRI, International Food Policy Research Institute.
Okay.
And they basically advise the various governments in the world as to what the food policy should be. So these lobbies had approached IFRI to recommend the governments to reduce IP6 in their diet. So like you, the IFRI scientists thought of me and they called me for me to have a meeting with them, and I presented my data, the papers and all that. Thank goodness, and I'll say that is my biggest accomplishment in life, is that IFRI had decided not to advise the governments to reduce or eliminate IP6 from the diet.
Okay, thank God. So they're not going to advise
the governments to reduce it. But okay, the work still goes on. The LPA, the low phytic acid nutrient work is still going on. And there are big multinational corporations which are sponsoring them and supporting them. And the scientists are constantly attacking IP6, saying that how bad it is.
So this still might happen, but for now...
I hope not. I doubt it.
Okay, all right. That's unbelievable. Believable. It is believable, obviously. if you're looking at industry and the money behind genetic modification, all you need to do is give them a reason. And they'll look to turn it into, they'll look to monetize it. So, but clearly, they would have to see it in the studies that IP6 does indeed, before embarking down that path, they would have to see that IP6 did block the absorption of those key minerals. In cells where there is a normal amount of magnesium or calcium, they would have to see that, wouldn't they?
Sure.
Okay. Well, they're never going to see that. Well, that's okay. Good. So just a couple of more questions before we go. What cancers, because I know we've touched on a few. You've mentioned breast, you've mentioned colon cancers. What cancers have you found IP6 to be effective against?
Well, let me put it this way. We haven't found any that it is not effective against. Because of the basic mechanism that every cell, every cancer cell, the fundamental mechanism is uncontrolled cell proliferation. And that's what IP6 does, is normalizes the cell division. So here is there's a one paper that I can share with you that showed the melanoma. There was a paper that came out showing that complete cure, they say, of melanoma, a stage 4 melanoma in a person. And for 3 years, the patient was followed up. The patient was taking IP6. He did not want to take anything else, but took IP6 inositol for 3 years. After 3 years, the melanoma never came back.
That's a documented case study.
That's a report from Mayo Clinic in one of the Mayo Clinic in Florida, I believe.
Wow, that's powerful.
I can actually show you if I may share the screen. I can show you the report of that. There you go. Complete remission on stage 4 melanoma.
Inositol hexaphosphate plus inositol induced complete remission in stage four melanoma, a case report. That is amazing. I'm going to put the link to that study in the show notes so people can access that as well. Do you
Actually,
know?
I believe the Facebook page of IP6 Research does have all those links.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
And were they, was this patient taking the 8 to 12 grams a day?
I think this patient was taking only 5 gram a day, I believe.
Only 5 grams a day. So
Yeah,
that's
yeah, yeah. He
so
was not taking the full dosage. I don't think so.
okay. Okay.
I'll have to look it up. Yeah.
And I guess a final question for you is, taking 5 grams a day is probably about 10 pills. The full dose, 8 to 12, and these are for people with cancer, by the way. We're not talking about preventing cancer. But from what you've seen in your studies, 8 to 12 grams at a full dose is 16 to 24 pills. Are there any toxic side effects to taking that much IP6?
I'm sure there are people who I'm sure at certain doses there has to be some side effects, but some of the side effects that are being reported are actually pretty positive, such as people are not getting any more flus. They're getting less attacks of flu or common cold.
So the,
They feel more energetic.
these are good
Some
side
people,
effects.
yeah, some people even very sheepishly have reported that libido goes up.
Their sex drive goes up.
There are other side benefits. We have not had any negatives, reports of negative side effects. Of the MP6 yet.
Fascinating, absolutely
Yeah.
fascinating. So, I also understand that. Quickly, if we could just, I don't know if we ever answered the question. I know you had it up on your PowerPoint there, but why combine inositol and IP6? Why the combination?
Okay, sure. I'll go to it. Well, first of all, let me go to the PowerPoint, show the slides. Hold on 1 second, I'll be right there. Okay. IP6 is I also I mentioned early on that IP3 is a common signal transduction molecule.
Yes.
And this is only a theory, and for that, actually, all the most famous biochemists and thought that I was really an idiot. I don't know what I was talking about. I thought that IP6, again, theoretically, could be dephosphorylated to IP3, and inositol could be phosphorylated. So if you remove the three phosphates from here, well, then inositol is yet to capture them.
Right.
That was my reasoning. And so I said, well, by adding IP6 to inositol, you could basically double the number of
Okay.
IP6, IP3.
I see.
And since the IP3 is a common signal transduction molecule, it should actually be effective in all the different cancers. Now, the site, one of the things that we found out, and this is kind of a serendipity, is based on the experiment, we have done some experiments. We always did experiments with IP6 alone, inositol alone, and the combination of IP6 and inositol. Now,
Okay.
in some experiments, we found that if you give only IP6 to animals, yes, there is a reduction in the incidence of tumor. However, the animals that got the tumor, actually, the tumors are larger. Okay?
Say that again. Say that again. The two.
The incidence of tumor with pure IP6 alone
Yeah.
goes down, consistently goes down. Okay?
Okay.
But in some experiments we found, especially in breast cancer experiments, we found that those animals who are only on IP6, and then had a low incidence of tumor, had some tumors, but those tumors that they had were actually larger than the control.
I see.
So think of it, cancer actually kills in many different ways. If you have a brain tumor and you take IP6 alone, there's very little space in the brain. Right. And if your tumor is large, for some reason, if tumor becomes large, it's not going to be helpful. So that's a side, that's a serendipitous discovery telling us that no, one must not take IP6 alone. It's not a good thing because it should be ionized. I don't know why, what the mechanism is, but it is what it is. This is what we observed, and it is my job to basically tell the truth as to what I see it.
So we have, it has to be combined with inositol.
Yeah.
That's the key. Okay. Great. Okay. That answers that.
So there's a schematic diagram of two IP6, IP6 and inositol actually making two IP3 molecules.
Gotcha. Perfect. So my final question for you then is, it seems to be a powerful chelator of iron, and in that case, something to be considered effective when you have hemochromatosis, for instance. It seems to be, from the studies, effective at boosting the immune system when it's needed, and natural killer cells, boosting those NK cells. It appears to be effective in you haven't found a cancer that it hasn't been shown to be effective in. But there's also, my understanding is there's also other conditions that IP6 is effective at preventing and treating, several other major health issues, as I understand it, like, for instance, osteoporosis. If you can briefly touch on what other conditions besides, say, cancer and or where the immune system needs boosting, what other conditions, and hemochromatosis we've covered as well, what other conditions could IP6 be useful in treating?
Well, you mentioned osteoporosis. It's a great thing. And again, here is a fascinating thing. Because I mentioned that IP6 does reduce the cell proliferation. Now, yes. One of the things that happens in bone formation and bone remodeling, there are two cells, osteoclasts and osteoblast.
Yes.
The osteoblasts are the cells that actually lays down new bone, and osteoclasts are the cells that eats up the bone. Okay?
Okay.
So there's a balance between bone formation and bone destruction. In osteoporosis, the osteoclast cells are more active. They're eating the bone. And here is a conundrum, and it's a good thing, is IP6 actually stimulates the bone-forming cells, the osteoblasts, and it suppresses the osteoclast cells.
Okay.
And there are people, as a matter of fact, one of my friends' sister who has osteoporosis, have been taking IP6, and she's in her late 50s, mid-50s or late 50s. Mm-hmm. And about 10 years ago, she, or 20 years ago, she started taking IP6. And when she went for the DEXA scan, the radiologist told her that her bone looks like that of a 20-year-old.
Amazing, amazing. Well, I guess, if it was an anti-nutrient that was blocking mineral absorption, then it certainly wouldn't be good for osteoporosis and bone health. So,
yeah.
So there goes that argument, right?
Yeah. And then Professor Felix Grasset has actually done some elegant studies also from Mallorca, showing done some studies on epidemiological studies, as well as giving IP6 to people who and shown that it does it does prevent osteoporosis. And actually, there's a company, I think the company that was a startup company out of in Spain that is promoting selling IP6 to for the purpose of osteoporosis. He has also shown the studies on kidney stone. It's a fascinating thing that it actually prevents the formation of kidney stone and can actually dissolve the kidney stone formation. Interestingly, Dr. Philip Hanneman out of Mass General Hospital here in Boston, back in 1956, I believe, had published a paper in no place other than the New England Journal of Medicine, telling that phytic acid can actually prevent the kidney stone formation. And nobody ever paid any attention to that. Nobody knew about that. But he has treated patients with kidney stone with IP6 and published it. So the kidney stone is one of the biggest things it's so painful. Unless you have it, you don't know how painful it is. Excruciating is a word, and one does feel what excruciating pain is when you get kidney stone. And IP6 can so on along the same line, it actually coming to anti-nutrition and chelation of calcium, it does chelate calcium, and that's why it prevents the kidney stone formation. And not only kidney stone formation, it stops the calcification, abnormal calcification, other organs.
Amazing.
Calcification in the salolithiasis. You have salivary gland lithiasis. It stops there. Calcification in atherosclerosis, it prevents atherosclerosis formation, as well as complications of atherosclerosis. There are numerous health benefits of it. Diabetes, it helps. IP6 itself stimulates the pancreatic beta cell to produce insulin. And inositol prevents it also acts as an antioxidant, inositol itself, and it prevents the complications of diabetes. Now, one of the things that happens in diabetes is the AGE, abnormal glycosylation end products. Now, if you have high sugar, this glucose combines with the protein and it becomes glycosylated.
Right.
It is not diabetes, it is that AGE, the abnormal glycosylated end product, that is the result that causes atherosclerosis, that causes retinal damage, that causes all the problems, the cataract in the lens, and so on and so forth. And inositol actually prevents that. So there are numerous health benefits of IP6 and inositol, and I'm glad you found out about them, and thank you for sharing that with your listeners.
I have become extremely passionate about this topic, having you come on the show and explain it, not just from a scientific perspective, but certainly in a way that people can understand, the average person can understand. So bringing that credibility and that integrity from your years and years of research and in the laboratory, and then also being able to communicate the benefits of this, what's essentially a miracle compound, so that the average person comprehends exactly how amazing this IP6 and this story actually is. And there's so much more we could probably dive into, but I know now we've been going at this quite a while, and maybe we'll have a follow-up podcast to also dive into a little bit more about your testing protocol and invention. But one last question for you, a practical question. for all those that are going to listen to this and start to think to themselves, hey, you know, we've got to jump on IP6 for all of these reasons. You know, I can personally tell you that after having this discussion, I'm going to up the amount that I'm taking because I've been taking 2 grams a day. I think I'm going to up that just a bit. But what is the best way to take it, on an empty stomach or with food?
Okay. Based on my research experience, and I believe that, go back. Professor Grasses has done a lot of studies on it in Mallorca. He feels that it doesn't do anything. There's no difference by taking it with the food or not, without the food.
Okay.
But I am cautious about it in the sense that, it's kind of a reactive molecule, and I don't want to give it the chance of any possibility of it being binding with the food and lower its absorption. So my recommendation, what I do is I take it, say, 15, 20 minutes or half an hour before I eat any meal or any other medicine or anything else, so that because once it is in the stomach, it gets very quickly absorbed. And the rat experiments, we have seen that it gets very quickly, goes inside the gastric epithelial cells and out into the bloodstream to the capillaries. So waiting 10, 15 minutes or 20 minutes before you have the meal is probably a very, very good way. I don't know if it is really necessary, if it is mandatory, but I that's what I do and that's what I recommend.
That's a great recommendation and a good explanation as to why, because I've seen information on taking it without food. And I think you explain it, really well as to why that's probably the best way forward. So that's the way I've been taking it, on an empty stomach. So, but if you can take it 15 to 20 minutes before a meal, then, it should be no issue.
Sure.
Okay. Well, that has been an absolutely fascinating and intriguing discussion, Dr. Shamsuddin. I thank you for this knowledge and this information, the work that you're doing and that you've done by bringing this compound to market and for raising awareness of it. I think there needs to be a heck of a lot more awareness about IP6 and all of its benefits and its beneficial properties. It's not for all that it does, and for all the studies that are out there on it, it's almost like the best kept secret in nutrition. So we need to do more to get the word out. So I want to say thank you for being our guest today. I'll look forward to speaking with you again. Before we go, is there anything you want to say? Are there any websites people should visit to learn more about you and the work that you're doing? Are there any links to any social media sites that you want to promote before we part ways?
The IP-6.net website is gives some basic information, but it's easier to have the Facebook page updated. So there is a Facebook page. It's just IP-6 Research is the name of the Facebook page. So let me go on in there. So that's Oh, this is the list of the things that IPv6 does. We haven't covered that. IPv6, the research, go to the Facebook page, and you can, what I do is we update every time we get new papers. I usually upload it to the Facebook or give links to the Facebook, and that's the only one. I mainly contacted by going into research at ip-6.net. That's basically it.
Well, that's that's good enough. I've been on your site, and I've been on the I've checked out the Facebook group. Lots of great information, lots of really helpful insights. So I encourage everyone to visit
Yeah,
both.
it's easier to actually upload things on the Facebook, just quicker and
Yeah.
faster instead of going.
Yeah, there's a lot of great information there. I would also recommend your book, and also your colleague's book, Too Good, right? Too Good to, the book, Too Good to Be True, and your book as well on IP6 really dives into the details and the studies and the all of the information that backs up. What's been what IP6 has been found to be able to do and achieve. So again, thank you so much
My pleasure. Thank you.
for coming on the podcast. It's been a great conversation. I can't wait to release it and get this information out there. And let's stay in touch. I'll look forward to having you on again.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for your public service, actually. As you said, it's kind of a secret that people don't know about. I wish more people know about it. What they do with that, they should know about the information, and it's entirely up to them what to do with that information. But I think everybody has a right to the information, and they can decide. I mean, when I have a tendency as a physician, I always feel morally obligated when somebody tells me that they have a cancer or something, and I have a moral obligation to tell them. I have found out a lot of people basically sneered. They said, "Oh, what are you talking about?" So I stopped doing that, as a matter of fact. Even my wife says, "You got to stop telling people about it because they put you down." As a matter of fact, I told this to one of my friends who about his kidney stone. He has been suffering from kidney stone, and what his wife did is did some search, and just like she found out, "Oh, it's an anti-nutrient." "Oh, no, whatever." So it's but the thing is, I feel morally obligated that anyway to have the to give the information, and what you do with your information is you it's up to you, it's your choice. And I thank
Exactly.
you for bringing the information to the public, to at least a few more people, and let them decide what they want to do.
Exactly. Doctor, it's been a pleasure. Look forward to speaking again soon.
Pleasure is mine. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.